Most people, I think, have heard of the five-second rule. That if food spends just 5 seconds on the floor, dirt and germs won't have enough time to contaminate it. I'm getting to that. Parents will sometimes apply that to pacifiers. Of course, only after the first kid. Only after the first kid, yeah. The history of the five-second rule is difficult to trace. One legend attributes it to Genghis Khan, of all people, who declared that food could be on the ground for 5 hours and still be safe to eat. But a 2016 experiment should permanently debunk, you think I'm joking, should permanently debunk the five-second rule. Professor Donald W. Schaffner, a food microbiologist at Rutgers University, reported that a 2-year study, okay, I'm going to stop there for a minute. Somebody's funding that and giving all kinds of money to that. And I would just like to say, please support your local church. Okay. A 2-year study concluded that no matter how fast you pick up food that falls on the floor, you will pick up bacteria with it. And you can check it out for yourself in his journal article. Is the 5-second rule real? That's the title of the journal article, and it's found in the always exciting Journal for Applied and Environmental Microbiology. Professor Schaffner tested 4 surfaces: stainless steel, ceramic tile, wood, and carpet, and 4 different foods: cut watermelon, bread, buttered bread, and strawberry gummy candy. They were dropped from a height of 5 inches onto surfaces treated with a bacteria. The researchers tested 4 contact times: less than 1 second, 5 seconds, 30 seconds, and 300 seconds. A total of 128 possible combinations of surface, food, and seconds were replicated 20 times each, yielding 2,560 measurements. So after those 2,560 drops, they found, you ready? They found that no fallen food escaped contamination, leading Professor Schaffner to conclude, quote, bacteria can contaminate instantaneously. In other words, they debunked the legendary 5-second rule. You can apply that in the dining hall now. The story we're looking at today deals with a deeper type of uncleanness. And I would guess it's one that we have all struggled with in deep ways from time to time. Luke chapter 5, I'm going to read verses 12 through 16. While Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said. Be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him. Then Jesus ordered him, don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. Yet the news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sickness. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. We're going to be looking at the subject of a longing soul satisfied. We're going to look at 3 angles on this one: the precursor to it, the radical nature of it, and the costly love it requires. A longing soul satisfied. the precursor to it, the radical nature of it, and the costly love it requires. First, the precursor to it. Now, the guy on the ground in front of Jesus didn't have some minor dermatological disorder. Luke, who himself was a physician, says he was full of leprosy. Several scholars suggest this wasn't merely a rash, but a disfiguring disease. And whatever form it was a severe case, which meant he lived something like a living death. According to the Old Testament, a man in his condition would have to wear torn clothes. He would have to let his hair hang loose and untended. And if anyone got near him, he was to cover his upper lip and holler out, "Unclean! Unclean!" He would not be able to live at home. He would have to live by himself or with other lepers. There was no coming to the synagogue. There was no joining in public worship. There was no morning coffee at a local cafe. There were no hugs from his kids or his wife. Relatives might leave food for him at a designated place, but he was cut off from human contact. If he was fortunate, he might find a reasonably comfortable cave to live in. And so the social consequences of leprosy were perhaps worse than the illness itself. Leprosy was a sentence of social ostracism. The disease deprived victims not only of health, but of their names, their occupations, their social habits, their families, fellowship, and worshiping communities. This man lived a tortured life. And so what does he do? Luke says the man went and fell with his face to the ground and begged Jesus, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." This would have been an astonishingly disturbing thing for a leper to do. And people must have been shocked by it. Lepers were strictly forbidden to come into town. Leviticus 13 talks about this. Yet Luke tells us that this incident took place while Jesus was in one of the cities. So we can only imagine how horrified people were as this man approached, violating every convention of polite society. People must have backed away in terror, with mothers clutching their children and bystanders gasping in disbelief. But this man is on the precipice of a transforming encounter with Jesus. Why? Desperation and conviction. Desperation over his condition. Conviction over Jesus' power to change him. Now, we might at this point be thinking, well, this is interesting, but ultimately unrelatable. I don't have leprosy. I don't have a medical condition that confines me to a 21st century version of a leper colony. Well, there's more going on in this story than a medical diagnosis and treatment. I'm going to talk about this next, but suffice it to say, leprosy is an ugly but accurate illustration of our spiritual condition. In order for us to have a life-transforming encounter with Jesus, we need both desperation over our need and a conviction in Jesus' power to change us. Now, there's a mystery as to why some come to feel this desperation and conviction and others don't. For example, why doesn't the entire leper colony join this man in finding Jesus and falling at his feet? I don't know. I just know that something happened in this particular man that caused him to take this very unusual step in entering the city, seeking out Jesus, falling at his feet, and pleading for his power to heal him, because he shouldn't have been there. Culturally speaking, the leper had no business being there. But he's showing you something. He came out of his overwhelming sense of personal need, recognizing his situation for what it was. And this is the way everyone should come to Jesus. Needy and desperate for grace. One pastor tells a story about a well-groomed man in his church tapping him on the shoulder one Sunday to inform him that they had a first-time visitor among them. This well-groomed man said to his pastor, "Do you see that man over there?" Pointing to the visitor. "Can you believe he would come into the house of God with those dirty jeans and that ratty t-shirt? When he passed me in the hallway, he reeked of nicotine. Pastor, what are you going to do about that man? He's a distraction to my worship." This pastor writes, "Thankfully, after the service, another church member got to our visitor before this man could. The church member himself, a recovering alcoholic, warmly welcomed the visitor, got his name, and asked him about his story. The visitor's name was George. He was recovering from a heroin addiction and felt like being part of a church could help him with that. When the leper approached Jesus, Jesus didn't say, 'Oh, my word, go clean yourself up and then we'll talk.' Clean isn't the precondition for coming to Jesus. Desperate and full of faith in the power of Jesus to do the cleaning is. This mistaken belief that a person must clean themselves up in order to merit Jesus' presence, that is not Christianity. This means, though, that the church will be filled with immature and broken people who still have a long way to go emotionally, morally, and spiritually. At times, the people in my church will hear me say to them, 'The church is a hospital for sinners, not a museum for saints.'" The old 18th century hymn puts it well. It says, "Come ye sinners, poor and needy, weak and wounded, sick and sore, Jesus ready stands to save you, full of pity, joined with power." The precursor to a life-transforming encounter with Christ is desperation and conviction. Second, the radical nature of it. When the leper falls before Jesus, he makes a request that ought to strike us as strange. What does he say? "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." It's interesting. He doesn't say, "Lord, if you're willing, you can heal me." What's going on here? Well, there's much more going on here than a mere medical condition. This man is suffering from an identity crisis. To be clean isn't just to be physically healthy. To be clean is to be acceptable. Put yourself in his day-to-day existence. If you're unclean, something is wrong with you. You don't fit in. You're not like other people. You're not normal. You stick out. And because of that, you're kicked out. To be unclean in the Bible meant that you either did something or something was done to you that made you damaged goods. That's how this guy feels. So can you relate to that? Have you ever felt like damaged goods? Man is not suffering from a medical condition, but an existential condition, an identity crisis, a relational crisis, a community crisis. Now, it may not be leprosy that does that to us today, but there are things that happen to us or things that we do to others that cause a sense of unacceptableness and uncleanness. You can hear the word shame with the language of unclean. Ed Welch writes about this. He says, "Sexual violations bring uncleanness the victims. They should bring uncleanness to the perpetrator too. Unfaithfulness in marriage brings uncleanness to the betrayed spouse. It should bring uncleanness to the unfaithful spouse as well. Verbally battered men and women are filled with uncleanness. They have been told they are worthless, and once worn down, they believe it. Adopted children can feel different from children living with biological parents. Even when their adoptive parents love them well, they can hear the message inside their heads, you were rejected. Somebody didn't want you. You're not like everybody else. If you're noticeably different physically, intellectually, or financially, you know uncleanness. And who doesn't feel noticeably different in at least one of those categories? Fall below the community standards of beauty and you carry uncleanness. So if you want to identify your leprosy, ask this question. What do you want to hide? What do you want to hide? That's a shortcut to identifying the source of this uncleanness in your life. What do you want to hide? So you see, we have quite a bit in common with this leprosy-riddled man. He's after much more than physical healing. Philip Yancey put it well. He said, we in the West are still learning the difference between acts of charity and the more difficult task of changing a person's self-perception. They're not the same. That's what this man's asking for. Not just charity, but a change in his self-perception, a change in his identity. This guy lived with the sense that everywhere he went, there was a neon flashing light above his head with the word unclean. Everywhere he went. And some of you feel that way too. Everywhere you go, in your head at least, there's this neon flashing light above your head that says unclean. We long for a new neon sign that says something different. The problem is we try to change it ourselves. We try to change our identity in fruitless ways. We know that there's this sign flashing above our heads that says unclean, and so we go about trying to change that sign out ourselves. And we do it in fruitless ways. Christina Kelly was a successful editor of various magazines tailored to young women, magazines like Elle Girl, YM, Jane, Sassy. Some years ago, she wrote this. She said, why do we crave celebrities? Here's my theory. To be human is to feel inconsequential. So we worship celebrities and we seek to look like them. All the great things they have done, we identify with in order to escape our own inconsequential lives. But it's so dumb. With this stream of perfectly airbrushed, implanted, liposuction stars, you would have to be an absolute powerhouse of self-esteem already not to feel totally inferior before them. So we worship them because we feel inconsequential. But doing so makes us feel even worse. We make them stars, but then their fame makes us feel insignificant. I'm part of this whole process as an editor. No wonder I feel soiled at the end of the day. She's putting her finger on it. She's saying we all feel inconsequential. We feel unimportant. We feel insignificant, unclean, defiled. And popular culture is out there preaching at you. This is how you fix it. Be pretty. Have perfect skin. Get thin. Look like the celebrities. And Kelly is concluding this doesn't work. She's right. It doesn't work. Now, physical appearance isn't the only tactic we employ to cover up our uncleanness, to try to change out our sign. What do? We want a new neon sign that flashes something other than unclean. So what do? We use our professional accomplishments. We use our popularity. We use wealth accumulation. We use social media influence. We will look to almost anything to cover up our uncleanness. But the result isn't anything different. None of them work. I think that's what created the desperation in this leper. Don't you think he's tried everything else? Oh, he has. He's tried it all. And it didn't work. He owned the fact that his condition was too overwhelming for a conventional solution to solve. And so he took the extraordinary, outlandish, provocative, controversial step of seeking out Jesus in a place he supposedly didn't belong. See, there's only one who can give you the cleansing you're looking for, the new identity you long for, the new neon sign you desperately crave. And that's Jesus. He's the only one who can change your self-perception. He's the only one who can give you a new neon sign. How? How? Let's look lastly at the costly love it requires. The story records that Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. And Jesus said, "I am willing. Be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him. Why does Jesus heal this way? There are examples of Jesus healing by just saying a word. There are examples of Jesus healing by just saying a word from a great distance. Why does Jesus touch him? Well, imagine what this would have meant to the leper. He hadn't felt human touch in years. What's going on? I think there are a couple of things going on. First, I think Jesus wanted the leper to feel the Savior's willingness and sympathy. The touch said to him, "I'm with you. I understand. I love you. I care about you. And I'm so sorry you've had to deal with this." Dr. Docker Keltner is a professor of psychology, and he was a scientific advisor for Pixar's film Inside Out, which is the first time I discovered that Pixar had a scientific advisor for a movie they were making. He claims that human touch is the foundation of human relationships. He explains this: skin to skin, parent to child, touch is the social language of our social life. The foundation of all human relationship is touch. There are 4 years of touch exchange between mother and baby. In the social realm, our social awareness is profoundly tactile. Keltner was one of the co-authors for a study that looked at celebratory touches of NBA basketball players, including fist bumps, high fives, chest bumps, leaping shoulder bumps, chest punches, head slaps, head grabs, low fives, high tens, full hugs, half hugs, and team huddles. And no posterior slaps are mentioned in the study. The researchers discovered that teams whose players touched one another a lot did better than those teams whose players didn't. Keltner has concluded that touch lowers stress, builds morale, and produces triumphs. A chest bump instructs us in cooperation, a half hug in compassion. One biblical counselor recounts the following story. He says, "I have a friend who is as far from touchy-feely as you can get. He likes his space. His emotional range is restricted. When a surgical procedure went badly, he landed in the hospital for over 3 weeks. During that time, he had a small but steady group of visitors. I don't think a day passed without someone stopping in to visit and pray with him. But after he recovered, he couldn't stop talking about one particular visitor. It was an older man. I don't remember how they knew each other, probably a friend of a friend. This man came in the hospital room, sat on the bed, and held my friend's hand. He held it for what would normally be considered an uncomfortably long time. He just sat there and held his hand. This older man was the first person to touch my hospitalized friend in weeks. And while my friend was telling me this story, tears were rolling down his cheeks. Naturally, that made me want to hug him. But I decided to save it for the next time he was in the hospital. Now listen, I know some uncleanness has been produced by bad touches. And in an overly sexualized culture, getting this right is very difficult. But if we throw the baby out with the bathwater, we may miss something good for us. Greet one another with a holy kiss is a New Testament command reiterated 5 times. Now, it doesn't mean I want to see y'all kissing each other all over camp this afternoon, but just hold with me here for a minute. Might there be good, holy, prudent, healing, and compassionate ways to engage in a ministry of touch like this man in the hospital received or the leper received from Jesus? A touch that genuinely and sincerely says, I am with you, I understand, I love you, I care about you, I'm so sorry you've had to deal with this. Jesus did this. He did this. Is that the Jesus you know? Now, there's a deeper reason Jesus touched this man in order to heal him. There was a transaction being made. Jesus gives him cleansing, restores him to community, and changes his identity. He has a new life. But after this miracle, where do we find Jesus? He's alone. He's out in desolate places. He's become an outcast. The leper and Christ have traded places. This is a tiny little foreshadow of what's about to transpire at the cross. Tiny little foreshadow. What's about to transpire at the cross. On the cross, Jesus was crucified naked. Roman crucifixion wasn't just for the purpose of pain, but shame. On the cross, Jesus is the defiled one. He's the unclean one. He's the excluded one. For what purpose? So that you might be the clean one, the accepted one, the included one. See, our uncleanness makes us feel worthless, whether it's due to sexual violation, marital unfaithfulness, verbal abuse, or being noticeably different physically, intellectually, or financially. Whatever it is we hide makes us feel worthless. But Jesus from the cross is saying to you, look at me. Do you think I would endure this for worthless people? Absolutely not. Let me take you back to the spring of 2011. Even in the U.S., the media outlets were abuzz with an event that wasn't even taking place in this country. The royal wedding of Prince William, second in line to the throne. Remember this? William had found his bride at university. Kate Middleton. Imagine this went down a different way. Imagine that William had gone about finding a bride differently. Imagine that the day before his wedding, he had gone down to one of London's red light districts and plucked a prostitute from one of the brothels there. Imagine William taking her by the hand, getting down on one knee and saying to her, I want to marry you, and I won't take no for an answer. Imagine that he'd set the date, given her a choice of any wedding dress she wanted. And then when the big day arrived, he had taken her to Westminster Abbey and said to all those gathered there, she's my wife. She's part of the royal family now. She will inherit all that I will inherit. Treat her for what she is, royalty. Imagine the cost William would pay for finding his wife that way. Would it have tarnished his name? Would it have brought disgrace upon the royal family? Would it have been acceptable? I got news for you. It never would have happened. You know why it would never happen? Because the clean don't do that for unclean people. Unless you're Jesus. This is what has happened to every Christian. From before the beginning of time, God wanted you. And so he's plucked you from your dirty, sleazy, desperate condition, cleaned you up, married you, and brought you into his divine royal family. At what cost? Jesus on a cross. That's how much he wanted you. You see? You are wanted by the eternal, all-powerful, perfectly holy, astonishingly loving, lavishly merciful creator of the cosmos and redeemer of lost souls. You are wanted. And so to the sexually violated, Jesus says, you are not defiled in my eyes. I want you part of my family. To the betrayed spouse, Jesus says, you're not undesirable to me. I want you part of my family. To the verbally battered, Jesus says, you're not worthless. I want you part of my family. To all who feel as if they don't measure up to some arbitrary standard of intelligence, skill, or beauty, Jesus says, you're not unclean. I want you part of my family. So in desperation for transformation, Jesus says to you, come to me and I'll take care of it. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes? I want to give you a moment just to reflect. We have more in common with this leper than we realize. There are aspects to our stories, stuff in the rearview mirror we keep tucked away out of sight. There's just stuff back there that we dare not trot out into the open because they're a source of shame. It might be something done to you or something you've done. We just need to face it. The realities here. The truth of it is we're all naturally unclean. The problem is we attempt to clean ourselves up. We use our appearance, careers, job titles, pay raises, even our church attendance or moral accomplishments to convince ourselves and others we're clean. But that doesn't go deep enough. They don't work. The leper shows you what to do. In desperation and full of faith, come to Jesus for cleansing. Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. You can give me a new self-perception. You can give me a new identity. If that's something you need to say to him, do it now. He's listening. Jesus, I pray that we would be convinced to the very bottom of our souls that we have had a transforming encounter with you. Whatever other labels we have used to describe ourselves, whatever labels have been placed upon us, all that is gone. It's gone. The only one that matters now is the new neon flashing light that's above us that says, child of God. That's it. That's what matters. And we praise you that that is what you have done for us in your life, your death, your resurrection. We celebrate that. We do so to the glory of your name. Amen.